When it comes to outbound, stop managing sequences and start selling with Nux. Visit nux.ai/salesgravy today. That's nooks.ai/salesgravy.
This is the Sales Gravy Podcast. Hi, I'm Jeb Blunt, best-selling author of Fanatical Prospecting, Objections, Sales EQ, and Inked, and I'm here to help you open more doors, close bigger deals, and rock your commission check.
Welcome back to the Sales Gravy Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Blunt, and today we have Steven Rosen with us. He's the founder and CEO of Star Results and the author of the book Focused. So today we're going to talk quite a bit about your book Focused, and I want to dive in with the first question because you drop a really heavy truth bomb right out of the gate. So you argue that when sales teams underperform, organizations almost always misdiagnose the problem by blaming the reps when it's actually a pure failure of leadership. Why is that our default reaction and what are we missing?
Great question, because the fact is I know it. I was a senior sales leader and the easiest thing to do is to blame the reps. Oh, the reps can't sell, or the reps aren't doing this, or they aren't doing that. And the reality is, if they aren't, then leadership needs to keep them on track. That's the role of leadership. The fact is that leadership is to blame because they're not following standards. They're not keeping things on track with execution. So, you know, this book is written for sales managers, but I probably punch the VP of sales and the CRO in the nose quite a few times. And to me, it's a system issue. It's very easy to blame the reps. It's very easy to blame the frontline managers. But I talk about the system creating these situations that we're all frustrated with. And to be honest with you, it's taken me 23 years to figure out where the problem is.
Yeah, no. And you know, there's a lot of different leadership styles. And the ones that I've always responded the best to is that when they were in that position where the team wasn't hitting the numbers, it was the leaders that would roll up their sleeves and work with our team to turn it around that I always worked the best with. So definitely leadership is like such a big role in the performance of the sales team. And, you know, like as you were mentioning, it's that level of accountability. So a conversation that I have with my team every week, because my team here at Sales Gravy helps drive the renewals and the continued relationships that we have with our clients, is, you know, what's the temperature of that relationship? How is it going? What are the challenges? Let's identify it early. Let's go ahead and start talking about it now versus like reacting to whatever the challenge is.
It's about being proactive and not letting things slip, or I like to use the word drift. It's when we sort of let down our guard. I used to have a boss who said, you know, sometimes having a bad quarter is not a bad thing because it forces you to look deeper. When things are always going well, you think, okay, kumbaya, let's just keep doing it. Let's pat people on the back. And that doesn't always maximize performance. It's not a bad thing to do, but there's other things you shouldn't be dropping.
Yeah, absolutely. The space in my sales career that I saw that the most, like from other reps, was actually in automotive. And I'm sure this theme carries through in a lot of other spaces. But in automotive, you'd have the reps that would sell 25, 30, 35 cars in a month. And they would disappear for 2 months and come back and say, wait, I don't have anything else right now. They don't have any sales that are going on. And then they had to go back through that mountain of like climbing back up to hit the number again.
You know, I talk about it. It's about consistency, certainly on the management side, consistency and holding standards, as opposed to, hey, we're doing great, we can pull back, or we're doing lousy and we got to jump in. I know you mentioned roll up their sleeves. One of the things that I try to hit managers with, maybe over the head, is it's not their job to jump in and rescue. It's their job to get their people to be better, to develop them. It's about working alongside them, but it's about helping them improve, get better, because that's really the long-term focus of a frontline sales leader.
Yeah, I love that. And I think this is a great segue into my next question for you. And you already kind of mentioned this about the drifting. So you've noted that sales performance, it doesn't shatter overnight. Instead, it drifts. Walk us through what that gradual erosion looks like in a typical sales department.
So I talk about whether it's execution or performance leaking, because nothing dramatic happens except small little, if you think of a faucet that's leaking, and then, you know, let's say there's no basin and it's just dripping on the floor, eventually it floods the floor. So execution or performance rarely breaks in a single event. It's gradual over time. And this is what it looks like. Coaching drops off the priorities, because I believe coaching is the number one factor that drives sales performance. So that becomes optional. the manager stop inspecting whether they're looking at KPIs or they're looking at deals, and then they are stepping into deals. So when you start to see those happening, that's a sign that you've already have an execution problem and it's been going on for a period of time.
How would you coach somebody if you started to notice that they're drifting?
One of the things I believe in, and it's not in the book, but I think it's an important point, is as a manager, let's say you're a really good manager and, you're with your reps 50% of the time you're out coaching. You have 10 reps, that means you're out one day a month with each rep. And you may be coaching on the phone and what have you. What you want to do is you want to create self-coaches and self-managers. So the example you give where if performance is declining, my hope is, and the training that we do, or at least the thing that we do, is to hold periodic accountability meetings. So one, it's not like 3 months and then, oh my God, things aren't working well. And it's not micromanagement that every day. I used to have a boss who would, you plant a seed and he'd dig it up every day to see why it's not growing. That's the example of micromanagement. You got to let us work it. We all know that boss, right? And they're always fun to laugh at. But I had a president, I reported for the president. He'd dig it up every day. Anyways, so what you want to do is you want to have periodic reviews. I believe monthly. It depends on the industry, I guess. Some industries are every week, and I think, oh my God, you're spending too much time reviewing performance. But my approach is that the rep comes prepared for those meetings, and they know what their results are. They know how they're doing activity-wise, and they have a plan if they're at 100%, how they're going to get to 110. So the rep is self-managing. It's not the manager's job to do that. If the rep is not doing that, and the manager wants to sort of teach them that you need to stay on track of your own performance. I mean, things happen, right? There's always times, you miss that deal, you miss that deal, but it's really up to the rep. If I'm coaching them, I can help them, but what I want to see is them critically thinking and knowing their business or being on top of their business.
Yeah, being an ownership and having that level of self-awareness to identify it. Yeah, absolutely. Now, and I've experienced, I was laughing because one of the sales roles that I've held, we had a morning and end of day call where everybody went over the status of every single deal. And let me tell you, about probably 60 days into that role, I was so over those meetings. And because I was like, I was one of those that self-managed and I knew where I stood. I knew where I was in the sales cycle. I knew what else I needed to add to the pipeline. And it felt like such a drag on the day.
It is. It's a drag on your time, right? I was very lucky in my career that I got promoted quick enough and I was the youngest senior manager. And I'd pick on HR. HR would come in and raise the topic. Should Fridays be bagel Fridays, donut Fridays, or muffin Fridays? And I used to get mad at them. I'd say, I don't care. I have a business to run. You decide what Fridays it is. And if I like it, I'll eat it. If not, I don't care. But, sometimes we'd be meeting to death. I mean, that is micromanagement at its core. I'm sure there was high turnover, not just new, but what you lose is you lose the top performers who are thinking, oh my God, this is horrible.
Absolutely. No, I really believe in like finding that sweet spot. I love the coaching approach that is near and dear to me. So I was lucky at the very beginning of my career in sales to have a manager that about 6 months into my sales role, because I was consistently hitting my numbers, my quota. And he came to me and said, so have you thought about what your career looks like in sales? Where do you want to go? And so we started talking about that and the options. And like the next 6 months, he spent that time like developing me. And at the end of that 6 months is when I moved into my first sales management role. And I loved his leadership style. So like I tried to continue that into my own.
That is what I believe works highly effectively. You can start to pick up who your stars are, right? And you want to make sure that you're helping them succeed.
Yes. And we've already started kind of talking about the rockstar rep. So we see this constantly. A rockstar rep gets promoted to manager. Major deal goes sideways. Their immediate instinct is to fly in and take over the meeting, save the day. They want to be the hero. Why is the hero manager actually an absolute anchor or long-term revenue growth? Like, how is this a help? How is this a hindrance? How do you work with this type of manager?
Your managers usually are your top reps who move into a management role, right? And they like nothing more than to close the deal. It's a rush, right? We all love that rush. But as I think I say in the first chapter, that's not your job, right?
Outbound 2026 is the biggest, baddest conference in sales, and it is hitting Las Vegas from November 9th through the 12th. Join an elite group of just 400 sales leaders and top performers at the stunning Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa off Strip. This isn't a seminar. This is a highly intense rock show for your sales career. So you want to go secure your spot now because tickets are selling out at outboundconference.com. That's outboundconference.com, and we'll see you in Vegas.
So why do they rescue? It's because they care in most cases. It's not because they don't care. I mean, they love the rush, but rescue behavior, it's not a commitment problem. It's a standards problem. Because what you want to do is you want to hold your reps to certain standards. One, that they can close. Two, that they can do good discovery. Three, that they can do good prospecting, which I have my prospecting book here. And they're sort of forcing stuff and jumping in. They're actually weakening the standards. They're saying, it's okay to call me. I'll come there. So as much as it may save the day, it doesn't develop the rep on the long term. It's a very short-term behavior. And sometimes, you know, the rep may be happy. Sometimes they feel like, oh my God, you didn't even take me into consideration. So the hero, the Superman, it's not their job. And it's a hard thing to shed. It really is, because that's where you're successful. Let's say you're a new manager. That's probably what you feel you know best, right? So that's a behavior that got to change.
Well, it's like the loss of control, because when you're in that contributor role, you have control. And if you're running your sales process correctly, you have control. So moving into that leadership role, you are having to give away that control, and you're also having to give away that trust to your team. That is such a hard transition. I mean, I felt that myself because I'm also deeply competitive.
Yeah,
I'm really competitive.
You don't want to lose the deal. Come on. That's horrible to think of. I lost. Yes, I get it. And it's a natural tendency. As I say, it's not because they don't care, but the reality is you got to stop yourself from doing certain things. And that's what the book tries to point out, as we naturally, most managers, even tenured managers, will jump in because they don't want to lose the quarter, the deal. But long term, that's not a good approach as a coach.
Coaching. So you draw a sharp line in the sand between coaching the deal versus coaching the rep. Can you break that down for us?
I get very passionate about that, to be honest with you, because many, and I don't want to pick, I come from the pharmaceutical industry. The deals are different. It's about prescribing behavior. Maybe there's a deal at the hospital level, but most SaaS companies I speak to, and I ask the senior leader the question, do your frontline managers coach? And the answer is, yes, we do. And I say, okay, what do they coach? And the first answer, or the only answer sometimes, is they coach deals. And to me, coaching deals is not coaching. And I know it's terminology. I call that performance management. You're managing a performance issue, where coaching is developing the skills to close the deal, to get the deal, to do discovery. So if you're just so-called coaching a deal, and let's say, okay, it's coaching because you may ask some questions and give the rep the response. If you're just coaching a deal, you're not improving their capabilities. And really, coaching should be focused on improving capacity, capabilities, getting the rep to be better. So I do draw a line. That's really well said. I get a little bit cuckoo about that, but I find too many companies think they're coaching. And to me, I don't believe they are. And I'll say that they're wrong, but they need to be coaching capabilities. That's their job.
I appreciate that you draw that line too, because, you know, focusing on coaching the skills for the individual better prepares them for anything else that comes at them. And if you're having to specifically coach the deal, you're also slowing down that whole cycle for that deal itself. I feel like there's a lot more side conversations. It's not moving along as quickly. And I've mentioned this on a previous podcast. We have people come to us and they're like, well, how do we increase the efficiency of the sales cycle? Some of that is the level of coaching for your reps. Have you trained them and coached them to handle the various scenarios in real time so they don't have to stop a meeting or stall something? And it's that preparedness. So I appreciate that you draw that line.
Preparedness to me is a standard. It's an expectation that if you're going into a discovery meeting, you've got your questions, don't deviate, you know, you can deviate from them, but you make sure that you're covering your bases. And when you're going in to do a presentation, if your manager's not asking you, what's your goal today? What are you going to present? How are you going to present it? To me, there's a coaching component, but now you like what I understand is figure skating. And I'm sure you have coaches to help figure skate. Do they sit in the locker room to coach you? Or do they stand by the bench or against the boards to watch, or maybe on the ice to watch?
Oh, they're on the ice with me. I had the pleasure of working with Oksana Baiul. It was an absolute pleasure working with her. But, you know, she was on the ice with me. So, again, I mentioned earlier, I love leadership that'll roll up their sleeves and they'll get in the trenches with me. She was doing the jumps with me. And she was breaking them down and we were doing them step by step. And so that coaching style resonates with me deeply. Yeah.
With all the technology that we have, you know, you got Salesforce, you got MedPick, you got this pick and that pick and whatever else. And I'm not anti-technology, but there is nothing. I'm an old style manager. There is nothing that replaces being out in the field and observing. Observational coaching to me is real coaching. It's not sitting behind your laptop and having a discussion, not saying that's bad, but there's nothing like being out there, as you just beautifully described.
Absolutely. An example of this in the observation, there was a jump that I was working on, and it's actually my favorite jump to complete in skating. And one of the things we get scored on in competition is our skating skill. How accurately are we executing on this move? Well, if you're sitting back, like to your point, in the bleachers at the stands, you're not able to sometimes identify as clearly which edge you're using to take off from. Because, yes, very technical. So in skating, some of the jumps are differentiated purely by the edge that you're taking off from. So her being on the ice with me and the angle she was with, she stopped me as soon as I landed the jump and she said, which edge are you supposed to take off of? But it's those observations that make all the difference, even in sales. Going back and watching, like, discovery sessions that I've had with clients or like call recordings, because what am I missing that I'm not seeing in the first pass, or what am I missing that I'm not feeling in the moment?
So it's very interesting, because up until about 4 years ago, there wasn't a client that did inside sales that I worked with. And then I had a client and they explained, this is what we do. And then I trained them. And then I realized I haven't covered how to coach inside salespeople. It's applying the same principles, but if you don't listen to calls and you don't listen to calls with them to debrief, then you're not coaching.
In sales and, you know, across the board for many other industries and professions, we're watching the tech stacks grow just substantially faster now that we have AI. It doesn't account for the human nuance. Like, it does catch a lot of it and it does help me increase the efficiency of my job. I was explaining to one of my colleagues earlier today, this like mad scientist board that I have put together for tracking some things with the use of AI. But you know, even with the way that that is set up and as detailed as it is, it does not know the day-to-day nuance. There are things that I still have to manually input and observe for myself. So
I have a line, I just produced an executive brief. We talk about technology creates visibility, but it doesn't create reliability of forecasting. And that comes down to coaching, understanding, and leadership discipline.
It's true. I love that. That's a very powerful statement, and it's so true. So in the book, you lay out your three things framework. When a frontline manager is completely buried under internal meetings, corporate minutiae, and CRM updates, how do they use this framework to ruthlessly like simplify their day? So we were just talking about some of the efficiencies. So how do we get there with your framework?
Great question. I love the word minutia. Sometimes I use a French word, but I won't use it today. So the three things, just I'm going to give you some history on that, if that's okay. I was very lucky in my career where I started as a retail sales rep. And in the pharmaceutical industry, that's kind of the lowest of the low, but that was fine. I had a retail background. I was happy to get a job. And in 7 years, I had seven different roles and ran three divisions. But to be honest, between us girls, I never knew anything about my next job. And what I would do is my simple formula of the three things. And I'd ask myself and my team the question, what are the three things we need to do to be successful? And my belief is if we did those really well, we would be successful. I've coached many sales leaders, and it always starts with the three things. Because exactly as you described, managers get busy. And they get busy with, I'm going to use the word caca. There's just so much stuff dumped on them. So they equate leadership with being busy. The key is, you got to focus on your priorities. Some people talk about, oh, we have a time issue. It's never a time issue. It's a priorities issue. But unless you've ironed out what are the three things you need to do to be successful, I call that the three things. I can talk about what I think it is. I do a session for companies where we do strategy execution. And we always figure out the three things before we go anywhere else. So the three things could be coaching, accountability, and execution. Okay, they don't have to be, although coaching I would put up there, regardless. So when you're busy, actually before you start to get busy, you want to block off your calendar to make sure that you're coaching, because the first thing that drops is always coaching. Your boss calls, rep calls to rescue a deal, marketing calls a meeting, all of a sudden you're dropping coaching. So the first thing is you need to know what your priorities are and make sure that you're scheduling around that, that there's time blocked, so you preserve that time for the three things that are critical for success. I once coached this, he became national sales manager. Now he's a CEO of a biotech company. One of the smartest people I've ever coached. And I remember him say to me, "Stephen, you know what? I don't feel like I'm doing a good job because I can't keep up with my emails." My response is, at the end of the year, nobody cares that you responded in 5 minutes if you don't make your numbers. Right? That is not your priority. And I've used that line so often. It's really about, we all blame time, and time is not the decider of that. It's what you allow in your calendar.
No, I appreciate how you put that, like what you allow in your calendar. So when I started leading the team that I have here at Sales Gravy, one of the first things I put in place were the one-on-ones. But previously, the way that I had it laid out, it made it really easy for me to cancel on my team. So being very honest and vulnerable right now, it made it very easy for me to cancel on them, which didn't create consistency for them. It really made my life more difficult with prioritizing. And so I ended up changing the whole thing up, brought the team together one day, and I was like, hey, so I'm going to dedicate this one day a week where we do one-on-ones. I don't care what happens outside of it, but this one day a week are going to be all one-on-ones. I have to show up for you guys, because this in their one-on-ones is where I do a lot of like coaching with them. And so I changed my calendar, and now everybody in the company knows Wednesdays are the one-on-one day. I ruthlessly protect Wednesdays, and it's very rare that I'll make a concession. It has to be something that is like genuinely cannot happen any other day of the week. But I guess my question is, when you're coaching people on how to preserve the times that they're dedicating to the three things that are the most important to them, my journey, I feel like, was really difficult, and I probably could have handled it better. So how would you coach somebody to, preserving that time? How do they get that message out to everybody else?
I was going to just add one thing, because I think you hit upon something, and I'm going to come back to the question. One of the other things, and I don't talk about it in focused, is being focused in the moment. How many times, and I love my kids dearly, but I'm talking to them and they're on their phones. And then there's like about 3 seconds I'm waiting, and then maybe I get a response. If I do the same thing, I'm probably a bad dad. But the bottom line, as a leader, if we're not focused and we're not present, that's not good. It's very hard to make that change, I guess, is the easy answer, because it means doing some things that are uncomfortable. It means saying no to somebody. You know, let's say the big boss calls you and you say, Wednesdays I have meetings all day with my people. You know, let's say your people call you and you say, sorry, can I call you tomorrow if someone needs something? But we need to get past that discomfort, because a lot of the issue is not the world around us, it's ourselves, because we feel guilty that, I should respond. I'll give an example of that, where the VP of sales calls the sales manager and says, I want to know how we're doing. I think it's the Acme deal. How are we doing on that? And the manager says, I got to check. And they drop their coaching session with Joe. To me, the right approach is, you know what? I'd love to update you. We're speaking on Friday. I'll give you an update on Friday. Is that okay? I have a coaching session today.
Yep. And I guess that's where, like I said, that chief repeating officer comes into play.
I love that one. So I use a different term. I always joke that some people think I'm like over the bottle or a little bit cuckoo, because I used to be called the theory of eight when I was in industry. And I'd repeat myself constantly as to what was important. But I really believe you have to do that, because people forget. You know, you've trained in sales. Sometimes you have to do 8 calls to move something forward. And I always call it the theory of 8, that you need to repeat yourself 8 times for people to begin to understand what you're trying to do.
Yes. Well, I don't know if you've seen this, but you know, JBJ like posts on LinkedIn with all of his prospecting. He has like the tick marks. And now all I can imagine is that our viewers, hi viewers, are going to have a paper where they're like tallying, making sure they're saying eight times a piece.
You know what? I have to tell you, Lena, I do believe it works, to be honest with you. Although I joke about it, you use chief repeating officer.
We're very much into like visually and like physically tracking things. That's what I'm saying. I can see it now. After this podcast episode, they're all going to be tallying. Okay, how many times did I say this? I love that.
If it's good advice, send me a note. If it's bad advice, Ashley's there to help.
Yes. I'll help you guys track it. We'll make a downloadable form for you to track. Well, speaking of having to be chief repeating officers, and that helps with just reinforcing things, you use a word that makes some people uncomfortable, which is enforcement. You use enforcement. You call it the missing link in accountability. I agree. So what does a healthy, high-performing leadership enforcement spine look like?
You're right. Enforcement, people think, oh my God, they think of that M word, micromanagement. The double M word, right? And they think, oh my God, they're enforcing. But I think it wakes people up. Enforcement does not have to be rigid. It's not about being rigid, right? Enforcement is not about intensity. It's about consistency. So remember I talked about micromanagement is digging the seat up every day. First of all, when you enforce, it's not with emotion. You enforce with these are the standards, Joe. This is what I'm holding you to. So it's a different conversation than the connotation that, oh my God, enforcement's bad, because I've realized, so I'm avoiding the spine, by the way, because it's a little complicated too. It's in the book. But that was my epiphany, was the spine. It was the enforcement piece. So just as a story, this is one I promised to get to. So you kind of led me there anyways, somehow. So for 23 years, I've been in my own business, worked with sales leadership. And I started by believing that coaching is the number one factor that drives sales performance. So I created a coaching model. In fact, it's available at Sales Gravy called Focus Sales Coaching. So I would train managers on how to coach. And then I'd realize it would die pretty quickly. And then I said, okay, customers, I'm not doing training without coaching. So if you want to engage me and you want to use my model, I will coach your managers for 3 to 6 months on how to implement it. And that worked better. Okay. And that's the enforcement piece, where senior management, senior leadership says, hey, we're doing this. Now, we got a lot of pushback. We love what we're hearing. We love coaching. We love accountability, focused on execution. But guess what? We're doing too much. We don't have time to even do what we're doing. And that's where the busyness is not leadership comes in. So which means is you have to remove some stuff, minutia off your plate, so you can do the important things. And that was my epiphany. It's not about getting like passionate like I get about stuff. It's about having the conversations about standards. It's about holding those standards. It's about making sure. So part of who I kind of, you know, Weinberg talked about feeling like he's punched in the nose or the gut, I think, when he said. But this is for sales managers. It's also for other people who are not sales managers. But the key group that it really tries to wake up is your second line leadership, your VPs of sales, and your CROs. Because if they're having a conversation with you, Ashley, and they say, well, how's it going with the Acme deal? As opposed to what they should be saying is, how's it going with coaching Ashley? Is she improving her closing skills? Has she done this? How are things going there? That's the difference. Okay, it's moving from coaching the deal to talking to your managers about how are they coaching? How are they developing their people? That's enforcement.
No, and I love how you've defined enforcement in this way, because another word that kept coming to my mind as well are boundaries, because I think it's a combination of boundaries and enforcement as well. I love how you defined the enforcement for that. So next I want to talk about like the agonizing reality of dealing with non-performers. So why do sales leaders hesitate for so long to make tough calls on people who aren't delivering? And how does keeping the wrong person on the bus destroy the team culture and drag down your thoroughbreds?
In those cases, the manager is not enforcing standards. They're not coaching to create self-managers. Because a self-manager would know they're not performing. They don't have to be told many times. Sometimes managers are afraid to upset people, so they don't intervene, or they intervene when it's too late. So coaching a non-performer, where my starting base is putting in accountability.
I don't mean to stop you right there, but you said something interestingly that just then about starting to coach too late. So what would be an indicator to you that somebody started coaching too late?
Somebody's missed two quarters, right? Somebody's clearly missed a quarter, and there's things they could have addressed earlier on, which says you're not inspecting. And anytime someone's not performing, I always put it back to them to build a plan how they're going to start performing. To me, the most important part of non-performance is starting with recognizing that there's a miss in performance. So sometimes managers don't want to go there. They're going to upset the rep. They're going to upset the team. The long run, it's worse. When non-performance goes on for a while, then it becomes the PIP, right? Do you know what the PIP is? Okay. So I have a term that I created called a SIP. It's called a sales improvement program, which means monthly you're sitting down and monthly you're coaching, and it's all about improvement. So my answer to that is everyone should be on a SIP, even your top performers. I talk about raising the bar because most organizations are never hitting their true potential. Never, 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 never. Even the top performers can do better. And it starts with always having an improvement mind focus. Doesn't mean you're doing bad, but if you're at 140 to quota, how do you get to 150? And I swear to you, my last job in the corporate world, we did that. Every quarterly review with our frontline managers. Okay, you're at 120. Come prepared. Tell me how you're going to get to 125. But it was always about raising the bar on performance. And if people say they don't do that, every company is raising the bar on performance. How can we do more with less? How can we do more? So to me, the SIP is always about focusing as a manager on improving your people's performance.
So, you know, you were just talking about frontline sales managers. If a frontline sales manager is listening to this right now, feeling completely buried under pressure from senior leadership, and what is the single most high payoff activity they must block out on their calendar tomorrow morning?
It's coaching. Coaching is, you know, every study. And I come from the pharma industry, and it's all about studies on blood pressure, on life expectancy. But every study shows that great coaching delivers great performance. Even ineffective coaching delivered more often delivers better performance. And it's substantial. We're talking 18, 19, 20% in many of the studies. So if anything, block your coaching time. The answer that I don't have time to coach is unacceptable.
I love that. So that's easy to do. All right. To our sales leadership listening, you have your directive. Go block that coaching time if you don't have it on there. And I will say it is so important because even for myself and any organization that I've been in, I've always asked for feedback. I want to know how to improve and get to that next level of performance. So my final question to you.
Can I just add one thing? Because I assume you're a millennial like my kid. I have a 29 and a 27-year-old. And what I've learned about millennials, if you're managing millennials, because they're different, right? And everybody thinks they're lazy. They're not lazy. I don't know why they've got that. If they're not being coached, they're leaving your organization because they want to and expect to be coached. Different than other generations. They expect to be coached. So if you're an old-time manager and you're not coaching your millennial salespeople, you're going to lose them.
No, I love that. I mean, it's so true because I feel more valued in an organization when I'm being coached because I feel the investment back into myself just as much as I'm investing in my career and the company that I'm working for. What is your absolute favorite sales win or career win that you've ever had?
I don't have a good story for you. I have to think about this.
I can share with you mine.
Okay, oh, that would get me off the hook.
Yeah, it would get you off the hook. So my favorite win was actually when I was in automotive sales and I had received an inbound lead. So for context, the dealership that I started at was across the street from a hayfield. It was in the middle of nowhere. Oh, we were 45 minutes outside of Augusta. So good luck just having people walk on to the lot. That was not happening. But we sold a pretty high volume of cars every month because we got really good at working the inbound leads, working the phones, working the lead list, that sort of thing. So I received an inbound lead, called the number that was listed. Turns out the number that was listed was a fax number, and I recognized this by the, you know, the sound of the tone when it came over the phone. And so I, from having been in the medical field, understand how to work a fax machine. And I knew that our finance managers had fax machines in their offices. So I typed out this whole message and everything. I ran into one of the finance manager's office and I said, "Hey, I need to fax something." And they were like, "Who are you faxing?" I was like, "A prospect. Please let me use this." So I sent the fax off, didn't think anything about it for the rest of the day. Came in the next morning and the owner of our dealership was like leading a sales meeting. And there was all this chatter by the time I walked in. Well, he sits down and he was like, "I want everybody to know that Ashley probably just won the best deal of the year." Yeah, it was a custom truck that had traded in that everybody was like, "Oh, this is going to be difficult to sell." But this particular person inquired about the specific truck. Turns out he didn't realize at first that he had put his fax number on the form, and he called the dealership, and the owner of our dealership was the one that answered the phone after hours when he called. And so he ended up flying in from Louisiana to Georgia. I picked him up from the airport in the truck he was buying and sold it. So that's my favorite win. I love talking about that one because fax machine to a closed sale in this day and age, who would have thought?
Some people don't know what fax machines are, to be honest with you. You know, I used to have one in my office that the paper would roll out. I don't know which copy of the book you've seen. I updated the front page and it says "Forward by Mike Weinberg." Mike and I have known each other for a while. And I sent Mike the book and I really respect him. He's written some bestsellers. And I said, "Mike, can you just review my book? Give me some feedback. Be blunt. Be honest. Don't worry about hurting my feelings." And a week and a half later, he says, "Use the F word. I really love it." And I said, "Okay, that's great." And he so happened to be coming to Toronto. I said, "Let's grab lunch. We'll watch a bit of a football game." And I don't like pressuring people, although some may disagree. And then I'm sitting down and I think, "Oh, wouldn't it be great if you wrote the foreword? Because that would give me a ton of credibility." It's like, yeah, writing the foreword for many people, right? It's credibility. And then he says, "Well, Stephen, you know, I'll help you any way I can." And I said, "Would you consider writing the foreword?" He says, "Oh, I just wrote one for someone. I swore that was going to be my last one." He says, "But I love the book, so I'm going to write it." There you go. There you go. I used the low pressure Steve Rosen approach as opposed to the high pressure. And he's been great. That was the first podcast I did. Even before the book launched, he called me, "Let's do it on a Friday at night at like 8 o'clock. I don't know. It's nice to have champions that support you.
No, I love that. Absolutely. And like, that comes down to a message that I share quite a bit and that Jeb shares quite a bit. You just got to ask.
I've learned you got to ask the right way because sometimes I ask and it's like, "Oh, here he goes again."
I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Sales Gravy podcast today. You were an absolute pleasure and so much fun to speak with.
It's likewise. So good luck to you and anything I can do to help you. I'm around and I mean that sincerely.
Thank you so much.
Nooks brings prospecting, emailing, and parallel dialing into one single workflow. Their AI agents handle the busy work so your reps can focus on what matters, live conversations. Stop wasting up to 80% of the day stitching tools together and start hitting your numbers with Nooks. Go to nooks.ai to see how artificial intelligence plus human intelligence equals more pipeline. That's nooks.ai, N-O-O-K-S.ai.